We're on the road again. We're currently recording from a beautiful motel in Richmond Hill, Ontario, as we are up here for the media day for the CP Women's Open. We're going to see the golf course that the women will be playing for the LPGA Tour event later this year. We'll break it all down next week, and we'll talk about it as we go along today. But before we do that, welcome to the Flagstick.com Tee Talk podcast. My name is Stefan Tiedorf. Laying across from me is the associate publisher of Flagstick.com and PGA of Canada professional Scott McLeod. How's the bed over there? Mine's kind of comfy.
Pretty good. Great for a road game. Looking forward to this. Looking forward to tomorrow. But all good. Got some golf in the last couple days, and let's get at it.
Yeah, you played a lot of golf. You were at a bachelor party on the weekend, acting like you were 20 again.
Yeah, I got a couple rounds in down at Turning Stone Resort just outside of Syracuse, New York. It was nice to get down there with 12 guys, get some golf in. Golf courses are fantastic down there if anybody's never made the trip. And great condition. And I don't think my game was in great condition, but hopefully
it had a few reasons for that.
Though. Yeah, but hopefully it'll be better tomorrow. We enjoyed ourselves. A great time. And we're just looking forward to maybe getting some more golf the rest of the year here.
Yeah, we got a lovely day. I mean, maybe we'll start there. What we're doing right now, we're up here, as I mentioned, in Richmond Hill. We're heading to Magna Golf Club, one of the more private tracks in the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area. I have never played it. You said it's amazing. I'm excited to get over there tomorrow. Give us a quick breakdown of what we're doing here.
Well, we've got a special event, obviously introducing the tournament to the media. Last year, I was up here for when they actually signed the deal to have the event here and announced it. And then tomorrow, we've got various representatives from Golf Canada, the various charities as well. Lori Kane will be on hand, who's also in town to play the PGA Women's Championship of Canada. And Brooke Henderson is in town as well as the defending champion to spend some time with the media and to get everybody a preview of the golf course. As you mentioned, it's not a golf course that everybody gets to see all the time, being a very private club, but it's amazing the condition. And I said it last year as well, it's a really great golf course for the LPGA as far as the length, the condition. The players will be super stoked to see it from the condition-wise, and the spectators will love it just to get out there and get on the grounds and to see what this place is all about.
Yeah, I can't wait. And I mean, to play a course like that where it's, you know, you said they have Ferrari Fridays in the parking lot, things like that. Like, just I'm going to show up in I got the nice car today. I got the upgraded Hyundai rather than the 2010 Hyundai that we have. So maybe we'll have Hyundai Tuesday or something like that. We'll see. Regardless, excited to get there. We'll talk about it all next week, the golf course and what we think. And, you know, the CP is still another 2 months nearly away. But it's going to be another great Canadian tournament. But another tournament just wrapped up on the weekend. And weird kind of week time in the PGA schedule. You got back-to-back brand new events, and the first one of those two was the Rocket Mortgage Classic that was at the Detroit Golf Club. Pretty interesting event. I didn't get to watch too much golf, but there's huge storyline coming out of it. Obviously, Nate Lashley winning at minus 25, which didn't really surprise me, the score considering the golf course, but who actually won with, as we mentioned, with Nate Lashley, the last guy to get in the field. He actually tried to Monday qualify into the event, didn't get in that way. And then I believe two guys dropped out. He ended up being that last alternate to get in, and he made it count.
Yeah, he did. I mean, 25 under, winning by six, which is, you know, just crushing it. And a lot of people have talked about this guy's story going back to 2004, you know, playing college golf. And, you know, unfortunately, his parents and his girlfriend at the time died in a plane crash, marked his life, obviously. Turned pro just after that, but then, you know, didn't really do much in the pro game, and, you know, had graduated from the University of Arizona, dabbled in real estate for a while, and then, you know, got back to it really big time on the PGA Tour Latino America in 2016, won their order of merit to get full Corn Ferry Tour status, which still feels weird to talk about that.
No, that's
that
a
way.
Terrible name, but I digress.
Yeah, and, you know, from there, earned his PGA Tour card a couple years ago, and then here we are, 2019. He's a tour winner, and as you mentioned, last guy in the field, and the odd part as well is the guy who finished second, Doc Redman, he was the Monday qualifier. So to have the last guy in the field and a Monday Sunday qualifier, go 1-2 at a PGA Tour event. This is kind of the dream story, and we talked about a little bit on the way here, the fact that, you know, you used to have Q School for the PGA Tour, and there was always that dream carrot where that player gets through and you get that storybook ending, and this really was this week for sure.
Yeah, and Nate's had a great year to this point, considering where he has come from. A lot of, you know, top 20s, no top 10s. He did all right at the U.S. Open, finished T28, you know, making a living, which he obviously wasn't doing before, but this is that game changer. He's only ever been on the PGA Tour one other time. That was last year, as you mentioned. He made almost under $300,000. He went up, you know, he's now a millionaire.
Yeah,
which is nice. And then before that, before 2018, he played one event on the PGA Tour back in 2006. So this is a guy, this is just a lifer out there that's been grinding. And as you touched on, quite a tragedy at a very hard time to go through that. You know, we've all been that college kid that, you know, you have no idea what you're doing in college, and you know, you call mom to ask her how to do your laundry.
Yeah.
And who do you call now? Now you got to be, you know, put on that strong face, even though you're, for lack of better terms, you're an idiot. You're a 22 year old kid just trying to live out there. So the fact that, you know, he mentioned it, that weighed on him for a long time, as it should.
Yeah.
You know, and lost his girlfriend in that plane crash, and just a terrible story. But 15 years later, he's wrapped it up, and he's a PGA Tour winner, and I'm sure they're proud of him today, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely, and I think a lot of people got invested in the storyline this week, and even for the Rocket Mortgage Classic, I'm sure, you know, they might have been hoping that, you know, Ricky Fowler or Dustin Johnson, one of those big names that were in the field, you know, went to the top and was their first champion, but they can't go wrong in Nate Lashley I mean, they can be proud that he's their champion for the first year.
Absolutely. And this Doc Redman, as you mentioned, this is a guy that, you know, temporary status on the McKenzie Tour.
He had full status on the McKenzie Tour, but he just earned temporary status on the PGA Tour now. So,
but still, like a second kind of out of nowhere again. It was an interesting week in Detroit. It's nice to see different guys out there. And they were talking about it on Morning Drive this morning. All these kind of first-time winners out there. We have the Nate Lashleys of the world, Martin Trainers of the world. Give him another shout-out. This guy can't get off this podcast, apparently. I'm drawing a blank here. There's a couple other first-time winners this year, and it's just been that year where nice to see these great stories coming out throughout the year of these journeymen that, you know, somehow have made it and picked up big wins.
Yeah, and these are two different stories. I mean, Lashley, obviously a journeyman. Redman, sort of a hot kid, came out of Clemson, you know, sort of a hot prospect. So a lot of people are not too surprised about this. But, you know, he was playing the McKenzie Tour this year. He played four events, had one top 10, had made $26,000, $26,150 this year. And now he just went $788,400 on the PGA Tour. And, you know, nothing against the McKenzie Tour, but if you look at the total purse for their 12 events in the schedule, he just won about a third of their total purse for their entire circuit for the 12 events in just one event. So, and on top of that as well, because he's now equal or better the top 150 FedEx points from the previous year, he gets that temporary status. He also earned a spot in the Open Championship, and now he's in a position that if he can work his way into that top 125, he's on the PGA Tour for all next year as well.
That's awesome. Good luck to Doc out there. He's going to have an awesome time at the Open. I mean, we're going to talk about the Open in a couple weeks. You just did a podcast today.
Yeah, I did.
Port Rush as well. Yeah. Want to give a quick shout out to that pod?
Yeah, Diane Knox from the Secret Golf Podcast. We had a little chat last week. She had reached out online on Twitter and just said, hey, has anybody played Port Rush? I dove in there. You dove in for a backup and said, hey, yeah, I know a guy.
Gave you
and,
a shout out.
Yeah, it was great. She reached out. That is Russell Knox's sister, Russell Knox from the PGA Tour. That's his sister. And she's done a lot of work on various media outlets, was a DJ as well in Scotland, and we had a great conversation. She's very excited about the Open Championship, and we just basically talked for a half an hour about Port Rush and the Open Championship there, and that should be on the Secret Golf Podcast in the next few weeks, just before the Open.
That's awesome. And just to wrap up, we were saying with the Detroit, the Rocket Mortgage Classic, sorry. You know, another first-time winner out on the tour this year. There's a lot of guys. I mentioned that. I'm just going to reiterate those guys I was talking about. Like Adam Long picked up his a win this year. Keith Mitchell, like another guy, picked up these big wins.
Great story.
Another great story. Corey Connors, obviously, that's a big one for us. And you know, a guy like Max Homa. The list goes on, and then you can even go to Ches Revi, who was 15 years between wins or something ridiculous.
Yeah,
this
and
has
I think
been the season of these guys coming out with the first or the kind of superstars.
Yeah. And I think that's the neat part with the tour is that this shows people that, you know, talent really weighs through, and it's not necessarily the favorites that take everything down. And it gives a lot of inspiration to those up and coming golfers that get there that, you know, it can be done. It's not a closed shop. As long as you golf your golf ball, it doesn't matter who you're playing against. No. I mean, you shoot 25 under, you could win the Rocket Mortgage Classic by 6, right?
Or you could be Gary Woodland and win the U.S. Open and miss the cut by like 40. Or he was like, he was in dead last after round one at one point. I'm pretty sure he just, I mean, can you blame him though? Like,
no,
you
know, I mean, like, hey, he made his commitment.
The fact he showed the up tournament is awesome.
For sure. And I mean, he had a lot of obligations, a lot on his mind. I'm sure he's had a lot of extra things going on. So I'm not surprised to see that his game's not sharp.
Well, I was talking to Nate, actually, Blasco, who's on the previous podcast. And he kind of said that, like, he could be anywhere in the world right now. He just won the U.S. Open. Detroit isn't really the most luxurious place to go visit, we could say.
Yeah.
But, you know, he stuck to his commitments. He's out there. Obviously, a short week, but good for you and Gary Woodland.
Yeah, and I mean, if you mentioned Nate, I mean, Hannah Green obviously won the KPMG Women's PGA Championship and decided not to play the next week. And, you know, she was heading back to Australia for 3 weeks anyways and decided to make it 4 weeks. You know, it's no knock on her, but, you know, that would be typical for a lot of players to kind of, you know, if you win a major, just, you know, take the next week off and away you go.
Absolutely. I would do it. I would check out for sure. Like, what? It's that once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to have that first time, go and experience it, go home to Australia for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everyone's different, but, you know, I can tell you I'm not going to Detroit if I just won the U.S. Open after I'm doing the swing. You can, hey, Jimmy Kimmel, call me on your show. I'll be there. Fallon, the whole nine yards. And
hey, even, you know, even besides that, just going to spend with your family. It's a special time. And as you said, it's, you know, you don't know if it's your only time to win that, and the odds are against it as far as it happening again. So, you know, celebrate it for what it's worth.
And now we move on to that another new event. Was, again, this is just, it's just odd.
It is an odd.
It's odd to see two brand new events, but both have very decent fields. We're at the 3M Open somewhere in the world.
TPC Twin Cities in Minnesota.
Blaine, Minnesota.
I
was talking to Martin. Ask him if he was even playing this week. He's like, well, I don't know if there's a golf tournament. I guess it just doesn't stop raining there, apparently. But yeah, just weird to see back to back. But as you said, there's a good field out there. You know, you got Keegan Bradley in the field. You said 8 of the top 30 are in the field.
Yeah, 8 of the top 30 is some decent pairings.
Tony Finau. Like, there's some big names out
there. The feature pairings, I think they've got Koepka, Reed, and Na together, DeChambeau, Howell, Keegan Bradley are together, Mickelson, Finau, and Lashley. So that's a nice thing for Lashley. He gets the win and all of a sudden goes into a pairing like that. So
he's a featured guy now.
Yeah, he gets all of a sudden a featured guy. And nicely in the other group, which is great for the Canadians, Connors, who just came. He was playing a skins game with Adam Hadwin on Monday here down in Windsor. As part of a Canada event, but he's in part of the featured pairing at 3M with Jason Day and Hideki Matsuyama. So that's kind of nice now to see Corey Connors as part of the featured groups.
That is awesome. And, you know, we love our Canadians on here. We didn't give enough of a shout out to, there were some good Canadian finishes in Detroit last week. Mackenzie Hughes and Roger Sloan were both in there kind of right to the end. Mackenzie was almost leading after round one. But yeah, a couple of T21s for those guys. Nick Taylor, T35 in Detroit. So nice to see some Canadians in the field in Detroit, but also, you know, at the 3M. Hopefully Corey's feeling better. He's had a couple missed cuts of late. He's not really on his game right now.
And he got waxed a little bit by Hadwin. It was 8-1 at the championship. And the nice part is the guys donated their earnings to the local charity, which is great. And Corey and Adam now head to Minnesota, and they're joined there by David Hearn, who just came off playing on the web and had a top 10 finish on the Corn Ferry Tour.
Corn Ferry, get it right.
And Mackenzie Hughes, Ben Silverman, Roger Sloan, Adam Svensson, and Nick Taylor are all in Minnesota as well. So we've got 8 opportunities for a Canadian to be the inaugural winner of the 3M Championship this week.
We also got a guy that's kind of taken over, I guess, social media a little bit. Victor Hovland, he's in the field again this week. He's using up, I believe you were kind of mentioning the car ride up. You get a certain number of sponsors exemptions for the year coming out of college. So he's using those up, but he's got this weird little hitch in his swing now. He gets to the top, he pauses, and he almost like, nope, I need a little bit more. And he just cranks it back a little bit more, and this guy is mashing golf balls. I believe he was first in strokes gained off the tee last week. He's up there, top 3 if not, but guy crushes it. But I don't recall him hitting the ball with that weird little glitch is what I'm going to call it.
Yeah, it's like a little pump in his swing. So I don't really know, you know, what the genesis of it is. I haven't really looked into it too much. Obviously, I saw it on social media just as you did. But frankly, it seems to be working for him so far. Yep. I mean, you mentioned strokes gained off the tee. You know, he's doing it not only just distance, but accuracy as well. Certainly don't recommend it for everyone. He sort of knows what he's doing or why he's doing it. But I wouldn't be surprised if he keeps doing it if we start seeing that on practice tees all over the place.
Yeah, no, that was it's almost like a Matsuyama, but instead of the pause at the top, he pauses then a little.
Yeah,
like, I can't even describe it.
Kind of rejigs it a little bit. It kind of goes back. Like I said, it's almost like he pumps it a little bit as far as at the top, gets that little in there, and then just goes back down. So, yeah, it's definitely different, but it seems to be working for him so far.
Not something you'd probably coach. And wonder, you know, what our guests would think about that. This week we have a great guest, coach for the men's national team. Why don't you give him a quick little introduction here?
Well, Derek Ingram joining us this week. Derek has been with the national team program for more than a decade and a half now. He started as an assistant for the men's national team, worked over to be the head coach for the women's team, and then now has been leading the men's team for quite some time. And a lot of those players that we mentioned there, those Canadians, be it Connors, Hadwin, Svensson, those are all guys that he's worked with. Mackenzie Hughes through the national team program, continues to work with some of them, and looking forward to a great interview. I think people will really enjoy his insight on the game, and they'll definitely want to tune in for this, and they may want to take a few notes as well.
Absolutely. And when we were at the Canadian Open, we saw him firsthand. You know, we were inside the ropes with him. We're going to talk to him about that he played a practice round with his team, but also, you know, Thursday, Friday, he was inside the ropes on the putting green, still working with Corey Connors on the putting green, just, you know, 10-15 feet away. So these are guys that have these great relationships with Derek, and, you know, you find that right coach and you stick with it, clearly. So, you know, I think it's gonna be a great interview. Why don't we head over to our interview with Derek Ingram now?
All right, we want to welcome to the podcast Derek Ingram, who's the men's head coach for Team Canada, and he's been in that position since 2011, joining us from Winnipeg, his hometown. Derek, welcome to the Tee Talk podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Just obviously you're home right now, but you're going to be heading out soon, which is a pretty popular hobby, I guess, for you, or part of your profession. But, you know, how often are you on the road with Team Canada? How many days a year?
Probably in the 150 plus range. I try not to add it up, you know, trying to keep married. So if we don't really know what that number is, I think you're a lot more likely to be able to stay married.
that's probably a wise choice, and it's safer that way. Now, that said, you know, you've had a long history here with Team Canada. For those that are not familiar, you have been with the program for many years, so it's not like it's anything new for you to run around all over the place doing your profession. But why don't you give us a little background on how you got involved a little bit with Team Canada, and then maybe we'll back up after that and talk a little bit about your personal golf career.
Cool. Yeah, sure. Well, I kind of, the first time I really did anything with Golf Canada was back when it was called RCGA, and I applied for a regional coach position. They were looking for a regional coach in Manitoba, and they had these small kind of contracts across Canada for each province. And actually, no, even before that, I applied for a national team assistant coach as a junior team. And then they got rid of that position and they offered me one of those regional coach spots. And really it was small. I was teaching and coaching full time. And all I did was take our junior team to the World Junior in Japan. And I did that 10 times.
Wow.
And it really just started from that. And they kind of just kept asking for a little more of my time.
So really for you, I mean, how did you really get involved with that coaching and teaching aspect? You were a player to start, correct?
I was, yeah. I mean, honestly, I wasn't a great junior player. I was, you know, I wasn't a country clubber. I grew up at a public course in rural Manitoba and I worked. I didn't play many golf tournaments, but I loved the game and I worked in my game, but I honestly didn't really compete. And I got a little bit better as I got a little bit older and then became a better player as a professional. I started working hard in my game when I got into the PGA of Canada apprentice program. And I love to teach and I love to coach. Those are the play. Those are the two things I had a passion for. So I just tried to focus on them.
I mean, growing up, you know, you say you played in rural Manitoba. You can mention, where was it at? What club was it at?
I played at Sandy Hook Golf Course. Okay. It was owned by a guy by the name of Jim Doyle, who won the 1968 Canadian Amateur Championship. He was also a professional before that. Actually, one of the better professionals in Canada for many years. He's passed away since. But he was like my role model and my mentor. And I worked in the golf course and I caddied him in all the tournaments he played in.
I mean, growing up in Manitoba, it is a small golf community there. And, you know, there's certainly been some, you know, talented golfers to come out of the province. Were there other people that you looked up to in the industry or other heroes that, you know, were people from Manitoba?
Well, from a playing standpoint, I obviously looked up to guys like George Knutson and Dan Halderson and Glenn Natchuk and Rob McMillan and Todd Fanning. I mean, those were some of the top players, and Jim Doyle, of course, from a playing standpoint. And actually, Dan Halderson grew up very close to Sandy Hook Golf Course as well. And so he was a PGA Tour player. So from a playing standpoint, and then, you know, some of the mentors on the teaching side or just the golf business side were guys like Pat Kemble, who's now down in California, Garth Gabranson, who's one of my best friends and a fantastic coach. He's in charge of the coaching with Golf Manitoba. You know, those were guys, John Irwin, I work for at Niaqua. So those are some of the good coaches and the good teachers in Manitoba.
I guess it's not very often you hear of a lot of guys coming out of Manitoba, considering the weather year round probably doesn't play too much, too greatly into a big golf career. Is that fair to say?
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's a short, compact season. You know, when the courses open up in the middle of April, they can be in bad shape for a month or two. Sometimes they're good. And then, you know, obviously in September, it gets to hockey season pretty quickly. So it's probably your typical season in Canada, but you know, people love to golf in Manitoba. There's tons of golf courses. The access is very easy and it's pretty inexpensive. And so there's a lot of people who love the game here. We just do it, you know, for a short period of time.
We feel you right now in Ontario. It's kind of been that weird start of the season where everything's been burnt out and or underwater for a lot of areas too.
No, I've heard.
Yeah, it's been tough. We talked about it earlier. You played on the Canadian Tour for a while. How long did that last and what ultimately led to you deciding to go into teaching full time?
Well, I played the Canadian Tour fully exempt the second year. The first year I missed in the qualifying school and I Monday qualified for a bunch of the events at the beginning of the year. Then I played the entire Dakotas Tour that summer. So, and then I played down in the U.S. I played a little bit in the Texas Tour. I played a little bit in California and in Palm Springs and then came back and I qualified for the Canadian Tour that year, played the entire year. So that was my second year. And then after that, I just realized, I've got a lot of getting better to do, and it was probably going to take me, you know, 3 or 4 years to get to the next level. I was a pretty good player, but I was like, wow, it's going to take me a long time. And quite frankly, that last year and a half that I was playing, I was doing a ton of teaching and coaching on the side, and even coaching players on the Canadian tour while I was trying to play. And that's a bad recipe to be a great player. So I was like, maybe I should just be coaching instead.
Going down the stretch with one of your own players, and he's asking you for tips, and you're going the opposite way. You're thinking about their game instead of your own.
Well, I was just remember thinking to myself, like, even after I finished, I was coaching a lot of some professionals in Manitoba locally, and thinking to myself, I would compete against him. I'd be like, this guy, he's taken like 10 golf lessons from me this year. I know he's going to beat me. I wish it's not true, but so, yeah.
Well, we got to know you. Well, Scott's probably known you for years, but I got to know you a little bit at the Canadian Open. You were gracious enough to bring us inside the ropes with the Canadian Team Canada guys as we walked in their final practice round before the tournament. What does the Canadian Open mean to you? Obviously, with Team Canada being out there, you probably see a lot of your former players and a lot of current ones. What does that week mean to you on the PGA Tour?
It's a big week, and it's fun to be home and in Canada, and like this year was the best Canadian Open I've ever been to, and I've been to, you know, probably 8. So I was super impressed with it this year, and I obviously as a young coach the first year or two, I was just, you know, a little bit frozen, just like the players would be when you meet a hero. And now I've been doing it. I go to some other PGA Tour events, so I'm a little bit more used to it. But yeah, it's obviously a thrill to have our young guys competing in it, and then to see some of the guys like Nick and Adam and Corey and Matt to competing and doing well in the Canadian Open is very cool and pretty special.
So when you're out there and you've got the young guys, I mean, obviously, you know, Mackenzie and Corey, those guys are, you know, established now, but when you've got your amateur players, so this year, for an example, you know, having Whalen out there, Savoie out there, what are your goals that week? I mean, yes, they're there and they're competing. It may not be, I guess, realistic that, you know, they're going to win, but, you know, what do you set out as a team for your goals for those players for the week?
I think the big thing is, to just try and learn and take as much in as you can from the week and observe and get comfortable in that setting. And, you know, I think you can take that to the big amateur events the next year or two, or the big professional events, because they generally won't start in the PGA Tour. It's rare. And go, hey, I've got a comfort level. I've played in a PGA Tour event, and especially in my home country where people knew me and I was nervous and I really wanted to do well. And so obviously everyone's trying to make the cut as an amateur or at least play good golf for them and give themselves a chance to make the cut. We've had players make the cut in the past on our amateur team and have some good success there, both with Chris last year and Jared a couple of years ago. But it's more about learning and getting comfortable there and you know, checking out the workout trailers and see how hard the guys work and really observe their habits and their routines that great players have and you know, try and steal some of those nuggets that are going to help you become a better player.
Is your role really that week more psychology than technical as far as a coach is concerned? I mean, you know, dealing with their nervousness and their routines and how they're going to deal with the pressure that they're going to feel that may be bigger than they've ever felt before?
Well, for sure. I would say, first of all, from a technical standpoint, if we're blowing it up that week, then we're probably going to be in some deep trouble. But, you know, there might be some reminders on some feels or a couple, you know, cues that really work for them. And, hey, I want you to make sure you focus on this so that you just, you know, you have something to focus on it when, you know, the crap hits the fan type thing. But it is really about reminding them to, hey, this is your arena and this is where you excel and this is where you're at your best. And yes, there's more people and there's ropes up but you're still in your sanctuary there and you can still play good golf if you get into routines and just be a good version of you. So there is a little bit of mental coaching or a lot of mental coaching as well as all the other stuff.
Yeah, we had a front row seat to one of the, like, I was lucky enough to be inside the ropes for the whole week. I ended up caddying in the tournament, which was an amazing experience. But one of the coolest things I saw was when we walked you through that practice round. And I believe it was Savoie. He was chipping into the rink hole and he was down at the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
He has his 60 in his hand. And you just came down, you're like, what are you holding there? And he's like, oh, I got my 60. Like, here, take this. And I you must have gave him a sandwich or something, I assume. And
yeah,
whatever, told him bump and run it. And it ends up, I think, probably like 6 inches from the hole. And you just, I don't even think you say anything. You just little head nod and just walked back up to the top of the green and placed down your little putting circles. But it was just one of those, you could see in his eyes, he was like, I guess that's why he's the coach.
Well, like I think, you know, a lot of people just would take their normal club there in the 60, hitting into a hill, into the grain of the hill is going to get sharp pretty quickly. And so if you're not perfect with that 60, it's going to stick in and maybe come out lower. You might hit it a little bit heavier and that, you know, so I got him a club that allowed him to, you know, keep the shaft more neutral, had more bounce on it. It just worked through the turf a lot better. And it was just an easier shot, that he'd never really tried. And that's one of those situations where you don't get that every day, where it's a steep slope into the grain, really cut tight. Maybe it's moist as well. And so the club, a 60, really is going to dig in, and you have to be so much better with that club. You have to be perfect with that club. Whereas a 56 with a more neutral shaft is going to come out exactly the same. You just got a lot more insurance underneath it, or it's just way easier.
Yeah, well, I definitely learned something just watching that in that moment. That was super cool. But the other really cool thing is you had the mental coach. I believe that was the title.
AJ, Dr. Too Good was out there, yep.
What was her role out there during that week? I thought that was a really cool thing. And you two seemed to have a lot of conversation one-on-one together as you're kind of walking through the course as well.
Yeah, that was our first year having her at the Canadian Open. I mean, I may have had her when I was coaching the women's side, maybe 6 or 7 years ago at the Canadian Women's Open. But I wanted her to be there to see, you know, all how big it is for our players, and to see how nervous they'd be and see the excitement and just be aware of, that's pretty impressive. So it was really for our guys and for her to become comfortable in that situation and to really know what's going to happen. And so, and she's got a great relationship with the players. And again, just to remind them to be focused on the process and to do your thing and to have a couple things to focus on when things get a little crazy out there. Possibly it's your breathing or a couple key words or a couple key thoughts that are, you can go back to that allow you to still play good golf. And I like I said, I'm still trying to learn myself, guys. Like there's so much more I need to learn. Every day I wake up, I look in the mirror and go, geez, you're not even close, dude. You've got to get smarter. You've got to learn a lot more and you got to get better. But I thought, so it'd be great for Adrian to be there with our players to learn as well as our players. And it was a really good atmosphere for that.
Now, you mentioned the week was a busy week. You've had the Team Canada there, but you're obviously paying attention to the other former national team players as well. You know, how did you balance that week and spending time with all the different players, be it the amateur players and the pro players, the former Team Canada players?
Yeah, I mean, well, the top priority is our amateur team, and so that's, that week is devoted to them. And there's some other stuff, you know, sponsor activations, etc., that we had to do, possibly clinics or stuff like that. So it's a big, busy week for us, but a lot of fun and probably the best week of the year. So my top priority is with the amateur team. If there are some players in our young pro squad who played the same thing, they would have been our top priority. And then obviously I'm going to, you know, spend a little bit of time with Corey. And Mackenzie, although it was a late week for Corey because he had the U.S. Open qualifier on Monday, so he didn't get there till late. So I spent a little time with those guys. And then there's just guys from our national, our past, I'll call them past Dragons or Dragon alum, like mm-hmm. Nick Taylor or Hadwin, and, you know, Alvin Choi was there and a bunch of others that it were great to see and catch up on and just say, hey, how you doing? And, you know, and see where their game's at. I don't coach a lot of those other guys. I'm still, you know, Austin Conley was there. I, you know, help him a teeny bit here and there, but it was just great to see them all. And boy, the guys are maturing and they really look good.
Yeah. Well, one of the cool things, saw you quite often throughout the week working with Corey Connors on the putting green, amongst other things. But you mentioned it. He had a long week going into that week. I believe they played all 4 days. Yeah. Drawing a blank on the tournament prior to the Memorial.
Yeah.
Hopping to 36 at for the U.S. Open, and then straight flight from there up to Canada. We've had his caddy on here a couple times, and he was exhausted. Oh, cool. So I assume Corey was just as tired. Plus that course not being the easiest to walk up and down. But Corey's had a great year, picked up that win. You've obviously worked on him in the past. What did him winning on the Canadian Tour this year mean to you?
Well, winning in the PGA Tour was validation for Corey. I've literally said for years, I think Corey Connors is going to be a PGA Tour winner and probably win once a year or twice a year for 10 years. I know people, when I say that, think I've lost it, but I just believe the guy is that good. I mean, he's one of the best drivers and ball strikers in the world. He hits it flush in the middle of the club face virtually every single time. So when he has a good week around the greens and on the greens, he's going to have chances to win and he's going to win. So, but I think, you know, really what is important is for Corey and his family and his wife. It was just, you know, really fiance, I guess, really important for the wife, really important for them because they have a job next year. And that's, you know, last year he's in that conditional status and he just had an unbelievable start of the year, like qualifying and having good finishes. And then boom, to get the W, I think allows him to relax a little bit, but he's still hungry for more.
Where were you watching that win at for the Valero?
Well, it's actually down there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday with them. So with both Mackenzie and Corey for a bit, just doing a little bit of work with them and, or maybe a lot of work with them. And then I came home and I watched from my, my couch, with my wife and kids. So it was pretty
did,
special.
Did you stay on the couch or were you standing up on the edge of the seat the whole time?
Absolutely standing up the whole time. And if you know, my wife and kids are like, you, I'm the worst guy to watch golf with because I get, you know, you're so invested emotionally in your guys. It's brutal. So, yeah, but it was a lot of fun. And so it's just thrilled for him.
And obviously he got into the Masters the next week, which was a huge week. And again, how was that for you?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to be at Augusta with Corey in 2015 and Mac in 2017. So I've been before and I've been
lucky.
No, now I feel I'm spoiled, like I'm some kind of big shot. Not a big deal. I
just have, but just anyway, have your own parking spot at this point.
So I went for a day. I asked him, he said, yeah, I'd really like you to come for a bit. And I told him I had a training camp with our other guys planned. And so I didn't want our other players I want them to realize that, hey, they're the priority. And in this case, they were the priority. I could sneak a half a day or a day with Corey and help him with his prep. And he was thrilled with that. It was great for me to go. And then, you know, I had a training camp with our amateur team and a couple of our young pros. And quite frankly, that was my priority that week, but it was a thrill to go again and great to see Corey there. And I expect him to play great there. I mean, he plays a draw. The course is perfect for a draw. He's longer than average and he's a tremendous ball striker. So it's not like you go there and you expect them not to have good weeks. I think we were surprised it wasn't a much better week.
No, obviously with the Masters there, lots of other things in your past and your history, you've had a lot of highlights in your career, but one that a lot of people wouldn't have experienced since the golf was not in the Olympics until 2016, as far as coming back in 2016, the first time since 1904. How was that experience for you as far as being involved with the Olympics?
Well, that was a dream come true for me. I actually started talking about the Olympics and coaching at the Olympics well before golf was accepted back into the Olympics as an Olympic sport. I'd heard some rumblings on the ground that there may be a possibility, and I know Golf Canada and golf in North America had been, you know, big time involved in trying to get the game back into the Olympics. And that was something I aspired to as a coach. That was a written goal for me. I wanted to coach Team Canada in the Olympics, even before it was an Olympic sport. And so I started, you know, doing a lot of the education, multi-sport education to learn more and to be a better coach a long, long time ago. And so, you know, for that to happen and to be there was one of the real highlights of my life as a coach, and, you know, got to share it with Graham and David, who are two wonderful guys and great players, and, you know, hope to do it again and win a medal I won't be winning medal, but hopefully Canada can win a medal the next time if I have that opportunity. I'm fortunate enough to get it. And I mean, one of the other big, big highlights of that, Scott, was, that last day there, Mackenzie won on the web.com tour to secure his card on the PGA tour. And so I was in Rio on the phone with him and, you know, just hearing we did it, made that even more special week.
I mean, memorable as it is, but I mean, that made it that much more, right?
Oh, for sure. Really did.
You mentioned you dipped into a ton of other sports to be the best coach possible. You're a big hockey fan. What did you learn from hockey potentially to become a better coach?
Yeah, I think the best thing about hockey that you can take to golf. Now, golf's not an individual sport, but in what I do, I spend a lot of time with a team, and you know, I think it's important that you have a great culture and a great atmosphere, and not only great leadership, but you have a lot of fun with each other, and you have the right people on the bus. And so that's one of the things you know, I've really tried with our national team. You know, we're Dragons. We love to work hard. You know, having a nickname a little bit, I think, is kind of cool. And then, because they're long days, guys. You know, they're super early in the morning till late at night, and you're taking text messages and talking to players super late at night, early in the morning. And if you don't love it, you won't do it. If you don't have a passion, if you don't have a, you know, a connection with people, it's not going to happen. And so I've always been, quite frankly, it's all about the person. You know, we try and build great relationships and really help people achieve their dreams and their goals. And we try and give them every single opportunity. And all I really care about is doing what's best for the athlete. And if that's, and that's them as a person, not necessarily, we don't focus on results. We like to get results. we love getting great outcomes, sure. But it's not solely about that. It's more about developing the habits and routines that are going to lead to that. And really, you know, building relationships with people.
Yeah. I think, you know, in my other career, that's one of the big things I try to work on with my team, which is a much different line of work, but it's the behaviors that lead to the results, not the results that lead to the good behaviors.
I love that. I love that. I can buy into that. And you have to live that life. You know, it can't be pretend. The guys need to know it's no BS. I'm all in for you, and I believe in you, and I'm here for you. And if we get the results, great. If we don't, we're going to do the right things over time, and that'll give us our best chance.
Yeah, and I think I saw that dedication Thursday night at the Canadian Open. I was out watching you work with our good friend Josh Whalen, who's on the team, and it was late. There was not a drop of sunlight pretty much left by the time you guys were done. But, you know, that's what it's all about, right? That's the work and the dedication that maybe people don't understand for all these athletes that are aspiring to be as good as they can be and be on the national team and work their way up to the pro tours, right?
It really is, and that's why we do it. I mean, the you know, love for you have for athletes is unconditional, whether they play unbelievable or where they have a really bad day. That's just their golf game having a bad day. And you still, that happens in what we do, you guys. In a golf game sometimes has a bad day. Still, they're a great person who's trying to get better, and we're trying to learn from that. Or their golf game has a great day, and we're going to try and learn from that as well. So I think that's why I'm drawn to coach. I love people, and I, you know, love trying to help them achieve their goals.
Well, I was on the range the other day beside Whalen. I don't think he knew I was there or even existed as he was grinding away, and I was just right on. Skying drives left, right, and center. Who knew where they were going? He didn't give me any of your secret tips, though, so I'm just still out there going nowhere, I guess. Yelling four to the people on hole one from the driving range.
Is that a hook or a slice? Maybe Scott's going to fix you up.
He's trying. We're working on it.
Yeah. He needs to put a little bit more work in there, a little bit more like Whalen's dedication, but he's getting there. Definitely want to thank you, Derek. We appreciate you coming on tonight, spending some time with us. We're certainly cheering Team Canada on. It's been a fabulous run for you and a lot of great players, a lot of great players that we have fun following. And we appreciate you taking the time to come on and join us on the Tee Talk podcast.
No, listen, guys, always appreciate your support and how well you talk positively about our athletes and bring the news and share their stories. And you guys are great guys, doing a wicked job. So thanks very much for having me.
Thank you, Derek, for that great interview. As I told the story in there, it was just so cool to be inside the ropes as he's coaching these guys on certain things, just from having the, you know, decades, I'm going to say, of experience out there. I told that story of him talking to Joey about, you know, don't take that 60, grab this 56 instead. And he puts that sandwich to an inch and just walks away knowing it clicked to him. But just some of the coolest moments was of that week at the Canadian Open, you know, outside of being actually in the ropes for the tournament, was that walk through with Derek and the team.
Yeah, I think people can see from that or hear from that interview is that, you know, Derek's a very calm guy, has a lot of experience, brings a lot of leadership to that team, and you can see why he's in the position that he is.
Oh yeah, he's an awesome dude. If you have a bad thing to say about this guy, I don't know. Like, I feel like he'd cut me off in traffic. I'd be like, yeah, no, you probably meant to mean it. It's okay. Just, he's a great guy. Thanks, Derek, again. You're welcome on this podcast anytime you want. Moving over to the ladies' game, the LPGA wrapped up the Walmart Arkansas Championship last week. Sun Hun Park picked up her 7th career victory. She finished minus 19. She was the lady that was chasing down Hannah in the PGA Championship the week prior, made that massive putt on 18 that made Hannah have to get that one up and down. And obviously she's playing hot right now because she picked up a win the week right after.
Yeah, unbelievable player, has won the U.S. Open, won the Canadian Open a couple years ago as well in Ottawa. Super impressive. If anybody has ever a chance to get to see her play.
So long.
She's pure. She's long. She's strong. She's just got every aspect to her game. To see her shoot 19 under for this event and a 54 hole event. So, I mean, she tore it up and a lot of players did, but a great player. And I would expect we're going to see, you know, 7th career win. I would expect to see probably a couple digits in front of that by the time she's done her career.
Yeah, and I would assume so. She obviously, she's hot right now. She's a good bet any week of the year. Another couple awesome ladies that had great weeks. Ryan O'Toole, T6, you know, friend of the program. Lauren Kim, T13, her highest career finish, which is just awesome. She has limited status out on the LPGA, so she's making them count lately, that's for sure.
Yeah, she was pretty excited. She mentioned obviously that on social, and I think there was about 27 exclamation marks behind her her post, the fact that it was her career best finish, and hopefully for her that you know, it's a sign of good things to come.
Oh yeah, we're cheering for Lauren and Ryan for sure. Brooke didn't have her best week, T41. Yeah, she can't T10 top 10 every
well,
tournament.
Well, she certainly tries, and if you look at that score, obviously it doesn't look too bad at minus 9. It's nope. Just the fact it was a low scoring week at the Northwest Arkansas Championship, but you know, nothing to hang her head at, and fortunately that just means she's home here. She's got a week off, and we're going to see her at Magna for the media day.
We're going to run into Brooke tomorrow. I don't think we're going to have a chance to speak with her again. Go back to the previous one. We already interviewed Brooke. You know, we're going to give her a break. You know, she doesn't want to see us all the time. So go listen to the previous interview with Brooke. I don't know, a couple episodes ago. It was awesome. Brooke's awesome. She's always awesome.
She really is. And like I said, she's got a week off this week. She's the Thornberry Creek LPGA Classic is on in Wisconsin. And I know her sister is attending a wedding. So this was an event that we talked about early in the year that she was going to have a break. And but Jacqueline Lee, Brittany Marchand, and Alina Sharp is back. Alina's had a couple of weeks off. And I know she was out working with her coach. Coach out west, had a little bit of a tour through the Rockies. I saw her and Sarah posted from the Rockies, so a nice little trip to kind of refresh themselves on a Canada weekend, and they're back and ready to play at the Thornberry LPGA Classic.
One thing we talked about last week, and it's now official, we talked about Michelle Wee last week. She did announce she has decided to take the rest of the year off to get healthy. Do you see her coming back at all?
I'm not really sure. I mean, you know, I always looked at players that left the game, whether be it, you know, like a Lorena Ochoa or Annika, and you'd always hope that they would come back for whatever reason they came out of the game. You know, Michelle's young enough that, you know, but who knows? It would be nice to see her back, but she might have some other plans too. I mean, the fact that she's, you know, she's engaged, she's looking at getting married, who knows what she's thinking about beyond just the injury. I would see that. I don't think she's done with the game. I really don't think. I think she's just going to take that time off and pack it in and maybe discover, you know, does she want to be playing and how much does she want to work at the recovery? You know, whether the few months off really help her out enough that she can get back on the golf course, or she makes a decision to pursue something else. Who knows?
So if this was the end for Michelle, how would you describe her career?
Well, I mean, a lot of people would talk about it as being some sort of underachiever, but I really don't think so. I think she's somebody that's done a lot of things in a longer period of time than most people think. I mean, you know, she's really been in our spotlight for 16, 17 years, which is...
And she's 30.
Yes, for most people, when they think about that, that's an entire career. Yeah. Right. So, and the fact that in that time, you know, she won a U.S. Open, she graduated from Stanford while playing, she obviously did a lot of different things from a media side of things and in the spotlight. I wouldn't think that I wouldn't say it's an incomplete career. I guess if we're going to say it's disappointing as far as how much maybe she didn't win, I think that's being selfish for us. I mean, she obviously would like to have won more as well, but I think she made an impact on the game while she was playing it. If this is the end.
Yeah, and I kind of, they were talking about this as on Morning Drive as well this morning, as comparing it to like Dustin Johnson, right? Like obviously Dustin's got 20 wins. It's a little bit different, and he's had a couple of years where he's won five times on tour, but just that one major, that one U.S. Open, he is also 5 years older than her, so who knows what could have happened over the last 5 years, but she's kind of in that same way. I believe she has kind of 7 or 8 total wins on the LPGA. The comparison seems fair in a sense of like all the talent in the world. I think it's different though, where Michelle injuries, you can't control injuries. DJ was, he's got a long time. DJ's going to put up another 20 wins probably, I'd assume, at this rate. But DJ was more focused, it seemed, where Michelle seemed focused. It was just, her body was holding her back.
Yeah, and really when I look at it, I mean, she joined the LPGA Tour in 2009, but, you know, she turned pro in 2005. So 5 LPGA Tour wins, as we mentioned, that major. Short of the Avion Championship, where her best finish was a T16, she has finished at least second and third in the various major championships, and obviously the U.S. Open win. So she's performed well there. She's done a lot of things around the world. She was the best. She won the Rolex Major Award, the Annika Major Award in 2014 for best finishes in a major. And, you know, she did accomplish a lot. We wish she could accomplish more. But when you mention health things, I mean, you know, it's even things like, you know, appendix, bursting at the Canadian Open. I remember she was in contention there and, you know, obviously got...
That's so unlucky. Like
it is unlucky.
Like when Hunter Mahan, he was leading after two rounds and his wife had a child, which he knew was going to happen. But same thing, like, you know, sometimes life just happens. Like golf isn't the most important thing. And that's unfortunate with the appendix bursting, like... And also just so painful, too.
Yeah, I mean, she's had a history of wrist injuries going back to 2007, so it's no surprise that, you know, maybe this has just creeped up on her over the years. But, again, you know, it's life. I mean, life is not the LPGA Tour, and you know, everybody wants to be out there. That was her goal, to be out on the LPGA Tour and have that dream. But, you know, that's not just Michelle Wee, what she's all about. And, nope. and as much as fans may want her to be out there that much more, you know, it's not their choice.
I figured maybe a back injury at some point with the way she putts.
Yeah.
And now I keep seeing all these older dudes at my golf course lately putting like her. I don't know.
Just the tabletop putting?
Yeah, the tabletop. Just stop doing it. It's just weird. There's another event happening this weekend in Toronto. Why don't you give us a quick breakdown of that?
Yeah, the PGA Women's Championship of Canada, which is sponsored by DCM. So that's the DCM PGA Women's Championship, is going to be played at the Ladies Golf Club of Toronto. So that's in Thornhill. And that's a 2-round event. Great field. Actually, Lori Kane, who we mentioned, who's in town here for the CP Women's Open Media Day, she is in the field, and she actually won that title there at the Ladies Golf Club, hard to believe, 20 years ago in 1999. But a nice field there. Players from Sweden, India, Venezuela, Mexico, New Zealand, the U.S. These are mostly up-and-coming players. There's a smattering of club professionals in there as well. I'll give a little shout-out to a good friend, Casey Ward, who works at Credit Valley. She is in the field and playing. It's a great championship. There's been a lot of great champions over the years. Brooke Henderson's won this title. A lot of up-and-coming players. If people get a chance to get out to the Ladies Golf Club, I'm not sure. I guess they'll have one day left by the time this podcast comes out so they can get out and get to the final round of it. But it is an impressive championship and an important one for Canadian golfers. So if people have a chance to get out there and see some of that action, especially to, you know, see a legend like Laurie Kane, then they probably should.
Also, just a side thing with the Ladies Golf Club, good for them. There's so many golf courses out there that, oh, like Augusta National, for example, never had, you know, women members until 50 years too late, basically. So the fact that there's a golf course where it's like, this is for women, by women, this is our club, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, and people have to realize that the club was founded in 1924, so it's not like it's...
Good for them back... Like, back then, that could not have gone over well either.
Well, Ada McKenzie, who started it, was, you know, she was a pretty much a pioneer, and she was the founder behind it. Fabulous top amateur player, and the fact that she established it was pretty important. And I've been to the club. I haven't played it, unfortunately, through the years, but you know, it is a fabulous place. A lot of good players come out of there. We have a good friend, Elizabeth Tong, who plays the Symetra Tour, who does some guest blogs for us at Flagstick and Ontario Golf News, that she plays out of there. It's her club. They've been very supportive of young, up-and-coming amateurs and professionals in the game. It's a very healthy environment. And you know what? Even as a male, I've never felt out of place there. And it is just kind of a neat environment, the fact that it is the Ladies Golf Club of Toronto, right in the heart of Toronto off of Yonge Street.
I love it. I love it. Well, why don't we wrap it up there? A little bit of a shorter podcast this week, but thanks again to Derek Ingram for joining us. We're going to be back next week. We're going to break down our thoughts on Magna. I'm excited. I don't know if I'm going to sleep tonight. I'm this golf course. Look this place up, guys. It is beautiful. I can't wait. I'm just so lucky and thankful that I'm getting the chance to play tomorrow. And we're going to come back next week. We'll talk about the 3M. We got the John Deere coming up, also known as when Steve Stricker turns into Tiger Woods, because he always wins it. He also just won his second major on the seniors tour as well. This guy's on fire. You know, John Deere is going to come up. He's going to win it. He's going to go to the Open. We'll get all into it next week. But thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe. Rate us 5 stars. How many stars?
5 stars only.
That is right, Nick. 5 stars only. Thanks to Nick for editing this as well. He's probably got a baby in his arm. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.